Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group Podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Civil Rights Practice Group, was recorded on Friday, March 15, 2019, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's telephone conference call. Today's topic is the California Voting Rights Act. My name is Michael Wallen, and I am Assistant Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Today, we are fortunate to have with us J. Michael Connolly, who is a partner at Consovoy McCarthy & Park. After our speaker gives his remarks, we will go to audience Q&A. Thank you for sharing with us today. Mike, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. Today, I'm going to be talking about the case Higginson versus City of Poway, and it involves the California Voting Rights Act, also known as the CVRA. And this case was filed in 2017 and is now up on appeal. It was filed in the Southern District of California. It's now up on appeal in the Ninth Circuit. It essentially challenges the constitutionality of the CVRA. And I'll give you a little bit of background so you can understand the issues here. So Section 2 of the Federal Voting Rights Act prohibits the denial or abridgment of the right to vote. It's been held that Section 2 applies to vote dilution claims. That's essentially where someone brings you a challenge saying that his or her right to vote has been diluted, often because of redistricting. The Supreme Court has said under Jingles that you need to show three things to bring a vote dilution claim. You need to show that the minority group was sufficiently large and compact to form a majority in a single-member district. Second, the minority group must show that it is politically cohesive. And third, the minority group must show that it will vote as a bloc, or that the majority will vote as a bloc to defeat the minority's candidate. And these are the three Jingles factors that you that come up a lot in voting rights litigation. The Supreme Court has said that all three factors are essential to prevailing on the Section 2 claim. And in particular, the first factor about compactness is important because it ensures that there's a remedy to any claim of vote dilution. In other words, that the court can hammer out a remedy where a minority group can elect the representative of its choice. And the Supreme Court has said a number of times that there are concerns with Section 2 with the constitutionality of it, but that Jingles and these three factors are essential to ensuring its constitutionality. So enter California, and this was, I think, maybe in 1990, around there, adopted the California Voting Rights Act. What the CVRA says is it gets rid of this first requirement about compactness. And it says that if you or if a city has at-large voting and if there is racially polarized voting, then the city is in violation of the California Voting Rights Act. For those of you who don't know, an at-large district is when a city or a town elects all of their city council members as a unit. So an individual can vote for five city council members instead of just one, you know, around its neighborhood. Those types of systems are called bi-district systems. What the California legislature said is that if you have an at-large system and there's racially polarized voting, meaning that one racial group votes for one candidate and another racial group votes for another candidate, then you are in violation of the CVRA, regardless of whether you can show that you are sufficiently large and compact to form a majority in a single-member district. What California also did, like lots of other pieces of legislation it enacts, is that it created an attorney's fees provision in order to encourage private lawyers to enforce the CVRA. And if these lawyers win, then they recover their attorney's fees. What it also does is that if a lawyer sends out a letter demanding that a city change to bi-district elections, and if the city ultimately does, the lawyer also recovers the fees it spent up to that point, up to $30,000. So in recent years, I don't know, maybe the last 5 years or so, there has been an explosion of these actions from private attorneys enforcing the CVRA. They all sort of follow a very similar pattern. An attorney will send a letter to a city saying they have at-large voting and they have reason to believe that there is racially polarized voting within the city. And they'll say, you are in violation of the CVRA, and if you do not change your system of voting, you will we will sue you, and you will have to pay all of our attorney's fees at that point. So these have been, letters have been sending out, all have been sent out to all cities all over the state. And one by one, cities have capitulated and have changed their systems. And the reason is that a few have fought back, and they've been hit with massive liability, and others just recognize how easy it is to be in violation of the CVRA and have folded. So in fast forward to where we are here, and in around the summer of 2017, the city of Poway, which is just outside San Diego, received one of these letters from a private attorney saying it was in violation of the CVRA, and demanding that the city move to bi-district elections, where all of the city councilmen are elected through districts. Every single one of the city council members was opposed to this, and they all got up there and said they do not want to do this. But they ultimately saw the writing on the wall and changed their system to bi-district elections. This happened around the summer of September of 2017. After that happened, my client, Don Higginson, who was the former mayor of the city of Poway, filed a lawsuit against the city of Poway and against the Attorney General of California because of these actions and seeking to find the CVRA unconstitutional. Higginson's claim is pretty straightforward. Essentially what he says is that under the Equal Protection Clause and a long line of Supreme Court cases, if voting or if race is the predominant factor when lines are drawn, setting up a electoral system, then the system must be subjected to strict scrutiny. And that means that the city must prove that there was a compelling state interest and that its actions were narrowly tailored. Here, Mr. Higginson argued that first, strict scrutiny applied because there's no question that race was the predominant factor in these lines being drawn, because in fact it was the only factor. There was racially polarized voting under the CVRA, and the CVRA mandated that Poway change and go to bi-district elections. And then applying strict scrutiny, this would easily fall because, one, there's no compelling interest in maximizing the power of any one racial group, the electoral power. The Supreme Court has said that before. Two, even if there was, this certainly is not narrowly tailored. If there was any sort of problem, the California legislature took a sledgehammer to this problem through the CVRA by removing the first factor, the compactness factor, from the Jingles test. So that was our claim. Originally, it was dismissed on standing grounds. We went up to the Ninth Circuit and, in a very expedited appeal, got that reversed, went back down to the district court. And just recently, the district court again dismissed the complaint. And essentially, the district court's argument was that the CVRA does not classify anyone by race, and so therefore strict scrutiny does not apply. It's the district court read this in a sort of very constrained view, in our opinion, of what would constitute a racial classification under Supreme Court precedent. So we are on appeal, and we just filed a motion to expedite, and we will be The Ninth Circuit will probably rule on that soon, and our hope is that the Ninth Circuit will hear this on an expedited basis. So that's where the case stands now. Really big issue for the state of California and for voting rights in general. There are a lot of towns and cities in California who are facing similar letters and threats of enforcement under the CVRA. And so I think they will be following this lawsuit pretty closely. So with that, I'm happy to turn it over to questions if anyone has any.
Not seeing any questions right off the bat. I had one of myself, Mike. It sounded like from the California Voting Rights Act that if you just need to establish polarized racial voting, that's reason enough or standing enough to change the system. What happens if that sort of racialized voting still occurs under the new system? Is it really just two different options, or could you then potentially sue to change it to a third system, or how does that work?
All right, so the CVRA is pretty straightforward, and it says that if there's racially polarized voting, period, then there's a and you have an at-large district, then that is a violation of the CVRA. You know, our contention is that the CVRA is unconstitutional. And so if that statute was struck down, then, of course, there'd still be an avenue for relief under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And the traditional way of proving vote dilution claims. So we think that the CVRA, by removing that critical component of finding compactness is what makes this statute unconstitutional.
And do you think that if the Ninth Circuit agrees or even disagrees on it being constitutional or unconstitutional, what do you think the chances are that the Supreme Court would grant cert on appeal for that and also decide the issue afterwards, regardless of how they come out?
You know, that's a great question. I think this is the type of case that the Supreme Court, you know, might be interested in. If for any reason, because you know, I'm obviously biased, but I think it is on behalf of the, you know, the plaintiff that it is unconstitutional under the Supreme Court precedent right now. So who knows? But you know, we're trying to win at the Ninth Circuit, but it's certainly possible that this is the type of case that the Supreme Court could take a look at.
With the CVRA going into place in 2001, I believe, is there a particular reason that a lot more of these cases seem to be coming up recently? Was there a recent change of events, or has this sort of always kind of been percolating there in California?
A couple of years ago, there were some changes in how attorney's fees were collected, and that might have had an effect on why these types of claims have increased so exponentially. Frankly, sometimes all it takes is some enterprising attorney realizing that this avenue is available and jumping on it. And it these types of claims are coming, I believe they're only coming from a handful of attorneys. So that's my best guess of why they've increased so rapidly lately.
That's interesting. How exactly did the attorneys, maybe this is going down a rabbit trail, but how exactly did those attorneys' fee policies change?
There was a provision involving a cap on attorney's fees for cities who are trying to comply with the CVRA. It might have had the effect of actually encouraging plaintiffs' attorneys to file these types of demand letters to cities and towns about the CVRA.
All right. Well, we do have a question in the queue as of now, so without further ado, we'll go to that first question.
My name is Helen McCaffrey. I'm a member from New Jersey, and I don't know if this is relevant at all. My area of practice was not election law. But a few years ago, we had a problem in New Jersey with Senator Torricelli, who was being investigated for various unsavory activities, and he had been nominated to run again for the Senate, and at the last minute, he dropped out, and it was beyond the legal limit for him, for the party to nominate someone else. And so it would have left the field vacant and only the Republican would have been running. And it went to our Supreme Court in New Jersey, who said that because of 14th Amendment concerns and so on, that and fundamental fairness, that the voters in New Jersey had to be given somebody from the other party to run. So that's when they re-nominated Senator Lautenberg, who had retired. I don't know if that in any way would be helpful, that kind of argument would be helpful to the whole California process, which I have to say baffles me, in that really it has decimated one party, giving complete control to the other party. I guess my question is, would that in any way impact the California voting situation?
That's interesting. I haven't, I wasn't familiar with the case in New Jersey that you were talking about, but I'll definitely take a look at it. I mean, as a technical matter, if it was arising under the New Jersey Supreme Court, you know, it wouldn't have any binding effect, but its rationale and its reasoning might be interesting to, you know, the types of cases we're dealing with out in California. So thanks for raising it. I'll take a look.
Not seeing any other questions in the queue. Mike, did you want to offer any closing remarks or further thoughts?
Nothing more from my end, except be on the lookout. And once this case does reach a decision from the Ninth Circuit, we will try to keep everyone informed.
All right. Well, we look forward to that, and we will most likely have another Teleform if that does happen. On behalf of the Federal Society, I want to thank our expert for the benefit of his valuable time and expertise today. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.